Hey, and welcome to the latest issue of the Three Old Geeks podcast. I am, of course, the world's oldest kid sidekick and the words guy. I am also no longer a modern day warrior, but my mind is still not for rent to any god or government. My name is Lance, and the reason I'm doing a solo intro on this is because the intro we recorded had a little few too many references to next week's material. So this is all new material. We recorded this past Sunday. It's got news, it's got a review of the Bad Batch, and once again, I am joined by the evil genius, the numbers guy, the keeper of the inner sanctum, Keith of Keith's Comics, and the man who's always wrong and has a hole in his collection, the dirty old geek and the pictures guy, Brian Needs One, and welcome to another issue. Brian, we skipped news last week and we got complaints from all over the globe, so I think we need to do something here.
We do have one little bit of news. Sadly, another passing. The great Charles Grodin passed this week at 84. Yeah. I don't know cause of death. I think it was probably something to do with cocaine. but what a great actor. I was a huge fan. He's
great. I liked mostly his part bits.
He was brilliant.
His bit parts, part bits, whatever. They're all.
There's a little difference between the two.
They're all in the ground now,
dude. Only you could slip an innuendo into a freaking eulogy for an actor you like. My God, what am I doing this for?
It's not for the money.
Yeah, it's definitely not for the money.
I apologize, Charles. Moment of silence.
Charles's family. He doesn't care anymore.
Yeah.
He probably would have made that joke.
He may have. He was
a lonely guy.
He had a dry sense of humor. He's one of those people who made everything that he did better with his presence. What a great comedic talent. And that'll do it for news this week.
All right, so this week we are joining the cult of number 45 on the Ringer's list of cult movies. We are joining the cult of La Haine, or hate, as translated from the French, from 1995, written and directed by, and hopefully I'm going to pronounce this right, it's Matthew Kassovitz, and it stars Vincent Cassel, Hubert Koundé, and Saeed Tag, and I'm sure I'm going to butcher this, Tag Maui.
I'm glad you do the introduction.
And this is, Brian, you brought it up when we were reviewed kids, so you want to look at a rough life in a major urban center. Kids is one way to do it. This is another way to do it. And this is a far superior film, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Oh, I don't even know that they're in the same class.
No, I think they're that you're talking the opposite ends of the spectrum or whatever. But just as a kind of a summary of it, first of all, the opening sequences are filmed during actual riots in Paris during the 90s.
Right.
And this was the writer director said this was influenced by an actual couple of incidents of police brutality by the French police, by the Paris police.
A flat murder.
Yeah.
But there are three friends kind of growing up in a rough suburb of Paris. It is 24 hours in their life, and it starts off with a riot that they kind of imply in the opening sequence, and a French police officer loses his gun during the riot, and Vincent Cassel, Vince, actually these guys all go by their own names in the movie, ends up with it, and it's kind of like the story of these three guys dealing with Paris in the 90s with corrupt cops and, you know, again, not having a lot of direction, not having a job. Yeah.
You know what? It's almost like a French Cabrini Green.
Yes.
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 But with more of an ethnic mix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, because there's Arab guys, there's black guys, there's white guys,
and Jewish,
like Vince is Jewish and stuff like that, and they're all
a bunch of immigrants.
They're all kind of like the immigrants or the second class citizens, and they're all kind of stuck in this kind of really shitty neighborhood in essentially the projects.
Stuff that was built and never upkept.
Yeah. Now, if I was going to say how which film could I relate to more on a growing up kind of level, it would have been this one.
Okay.
not so much the drinking and the sex all the time, and that's all we talk about, and pissed on walls.
Yeah,
it was
hang out with your buddies, and you'd pass a joint, and you'd have a couple
of
beers.
And then you'd go do something, and you'd go do something else, and you get into a little fight, and you'd be, fuck you, and then you leave, and then you get back together an hour later because you're friends again.
Yeah.
That would have been more realistic to me.
Okay, yeah, and that's, I definitely can relate to you as far as that can. Thank God we did not have, you know, at least where I grew up, we did not have this kind of police brutality.
That we knew about.
At least none of that was inflicted on me, let's put it that way.
None inflicted on me either.
I don't know if we're just lucky or something like that, but...
It's funny because I've read a couple different interviews with the director where one, he says it's absolutely an anti-police film.
Okay.
And another interview where he says, no, it's not an anti-police film at all.
Well, and then at the time of the, I think it's the premier of France or the president of France or whatever, he screened this for his cabinet and basically said, this is the problem that we have right now. We need to look into fixing this.
And I do think, I think it's interesting how they hire cops. I do. It's an interesting, to me, you can't do drugs. You can't have ever been into trouble. You can't. So really, you can't relate to the people that you're going to talk to at all.
That's the thing, like, how many times have cops been portrayed, or even people that I, you know, that I know in passing or something like that, where, like, you go, man, if this guy wasn't a cop, I could see him being, like, a gangster. You know?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's what keeps them from being that, and there are obviously bad cops and stuff like that, but... There's that certain kind of gang mentality with a lot of, and I'm not trying to stereotype them or anything like that, but I think there's a lot of that gang mentality. Like they're the other side of that.
They're two sides of the same coin,
right?
You know, you have crime, law, and crime. It's two sides, and that blurs.
Yeah,
you know, there's no honesty among thieves. No, there is a code. There's a code that you follow, even in the mafia. If you cross the line, they take care of the problem.
Yeah.
And as a cop, if you cross the line, they take care of the problem.
Right.
I don't like movies that portray all cops as being bad.
Well, no, and they had the one cop kind of at the beginning. Like, he's the guy who actually got Saeed out of jail and stuff like that. And he seemed like, and everybody was shaking his hand, and he seemed like a decent guy and stuff like that. One out of, however, 12 cops that they showed in this. And every other cop was a fucking abusive jerk.
Yeah. And even when they were kind of training the one guy.
Yeah.
No, you can't lose control. You may want to, but you can't do it.
Yeah.
It doesn't play well when we have things like the Burge scandal in Chicago.
Yeah.
With them electrocuting.
Yeah. No, and that's what I was kind of like sitting there going, okay, well, yeah, put somebody in a headlock and holding their neck at an awkward angle is probably painful. But the stuff that I've heard that just come out of the city of Chicago is like, You guys don't know what police brutality is.
Yeah, and so you got a question, because you do hear these stories where they take, like, mentally disabled men and they keep them awake for 36 hours and work them in shifts and until they just fucking sign whatever they want them to sign so that they can go home, because they think that if they sign it, they go home, and they don't. They go to prison forever.
God,
I have a problem. Historically... I think that law enforcement, especially on high-profile cases, has been more like this when you see the mistakes that are made, because we're human. But it was hard. This is a beautifully filmed film.
That was the other thing, is it's shot in black and white, and that's one of Keith's detractions on this, I know that.
When you have white subtitles...
I didn't have a problem with the subtitles at all.
You guys must have found a different...
We must have, because I did not have one problem.
The first one on there, it was like, wearing a white shirt, you can read any words that we're saying.
Oh,
I
must have watched different feeds or something
that. We must have, because I had no issue.
I couldn't read, like, probably 40% of the movie. I couldn't tell what the hell we were saying.
Oh, yeah, no.
Until it was nighttime and they were walking down the street, then you saw the whole tweeting Swastika thing. And could get that. But everything else they were saying...
Tweety's a gangster, by the way.
I could see
a gangster.
I could see a few words, but it's like, yeah.
Oh, I didn't have any issue with it at all. I thought the director embraced the art of filming in black and white, which I think today's black and white films lack.
Oh, it was shot
and
beautifully.
It really added a starkness to it. like, you know, it really made...
It was, like, raw.
Things look bleak, you know?
I mean, in those scenes where they shot, like, they did zoom-ins with the background coming forward, and when the one scene where you're flying over the city, you come out the window, and I'm like, how'd they do that? I mean,
there weren't CGI
or anything. Yeah, it's like, that was impressive. I mean...
Practical effects.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It probably was backward film or something. I don't know.
They just threw someone out, threw the cameraman
out the window.
Threw the
cameraman out the window. He jumped.
Yeah. For the film! Vive la film!
Yeah, no, I agree. This is a well-crafted, beautifully shot film. And for, you know, I'm being the film snob here, but it always seems like European films are maybe a hair better than your average American film when it comes to this kind of stuff, especially independent films, because I think the director's really trying to make a statement with what he's crafting and stuff like that.
I will say that I think that European films, and again, this is a European independent film. I think that there are definitely American independent films that would rival this.
Yeah.
I don't see any studio films this beautifully shot.
No.
With this kind of care and with this kind of... The independent, this is the director's vision kind of films, yeah. The problem that I have is, and I think I had the same thing with Kids, is that I don't care about the characters. You know what I mean? It takes me more... It's 24 hours in the life, and it takes me more than a day to like somebody.
Yeah.
And you're getting to see kind of the shittier aspects. I liked Saeed. He was kind of a cool character.
He was like... Yeah, he was like the hustler. Like, he was trying to get his money and stuff like that. Hubert was he's trying to run a gym, and it got burned down in a riot and stuff like
he's
that.
He's just trying to get out.
Yeah,
he's trying to get out. And then Vins was essentially...
Embracing kind of, the thug life.
He was the thug. He's the guy who ended up with the cop's gun, and he basically and the entire riot started because the cops had half beaten their friend to death.
Yes.
And he's basically going through the entire movie saying, "If he dies, I'm killing a cop."
Yeah.
What I found to be interesting, and it seemed to grow in the beginning of the film, it was like he was just a guy from the projects that they didn't really know all that well. Because Saeed makes some comments about you're going to get beat up for a guy that you really didn't know. And then by the end of it, he was their greatest friend ever.
Yeah.
And when he dies, the tears and the, and then he's going to go kill the cop. Kudos to the director for, you know how it's going to end.
Yeah.
You knew walking into this and you met the three characters how it was going to end. Ending it that way... In a way that I didn't see coming.
Yes.
You know what? You hit the ending that you thought you were going to get in a way that you just didn't see. And when it happened, you were like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It ends very, it's like abrupt.
Yes.
It's like you think the night's over and stuff like that. And we're not going to spoil anything.
Yeah.
This one's worth a watch. But it ends very abruptly, but it ends in the way that you... pretty much going in think it's going to end.
And then it gives you the Lady or the Tiger kind of ending.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting. He gives you the ending you think is coming in a way you didn't see coming.
Yeah.
And then leaves you on a cliffhanger that you just had no idea. So, that, by the way, I saw coming once I saw it, but I thought, holy fuck, good job. Holy fuck. So, I'm not a big fan of these kind of 24-hour in the life of documentary type.
Yeah.
Realistic, because I don't particularly care about the situation. And I didn't understand what was going on as far as life in that.
You need to do, you have to do some research. You have to research after, and then you find out what.
Yeah.
They're too vague on the situation.
Yeah.
Especially us being here. And
I was going to say, they take you into it. Like, you already have the information that you need to make this interesting.
Yeah, this was definitely, this was not, let's put this, well, being a French independent film, this was shot for French people.
Yes.
This was, if you American guys pick up on it, great, but this was shot in my country for my country men type of thing.
Yeah. Worth a watch just so that you research it.
Yeah.
To find out what was going on, because it is a different view of France.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then since we've done a couple of these things, there's always a couple of things that I like to bring up, like a scene or something like that. The scene where, with not only getting into the secure apartment building where Snoopy is, Like that whole, like, where they're just hitting buzzers and people are reacting to them, which was, I thought was hysterical.
Yeah.
But the scene with Snoopy, who's this kind of coked up, weird guy who's running around in a towel, like, it was, what are those scenes like, the Sister Christian scene from Boogie Nights, where it was like, you just, you go into this weird person's house and weird things start happening, and I just, I've always been fascinated by scenes like that, and this is as good as any kind of fucked up scene in any kind of a movie I've ever seen. I really enjoyed that.
Yes. I will absolutely get behind that. The most intriguing scene to me was the old man in the bathroom.
Oh.
Okay, I was hoping somebody would bring that up.
Defecation.
Yes. Oh. Yes.
It's a little story. Yeah, because that was dark. I could read that one.
That was so clever. And then it kept coming up for the characters.
Why did
as
he
much
tell
as
us
it
that?
Was yeah. coming up
exactly.
for me.
Yeah.
Why did he tell that story? And I've looked at it, and it's like I'm almost to a point where I can understand how that relates to the movie.
Okay, well, maybe if you don't want to spoil anything, maybe we got to talk about that off mic or something like that.
I'm not 100% there.
Okay.
But I did love that fucking story.
Oh, yeah.
And I also...
And how casual he is. He's washing his hands. He's telling them about him and his buddy, you know.
But also, he's telling them a story of just a way worse life than they have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just way worse. You're going to Siberia.
Yeah.
To a work camp. Life is fucked up for you. And it's just implied in there. Never
maybe
bitches
maybe
about
that's
it.
What he was trying to get at. There's things, you know, you guys think you got it shitty.
Yeah.
There are worse things.
No, I think it had more to do with the friends.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at. Is like he heard their entire conversation in the bathroom, so I was trying to relate that to that conversation that they were having. But maybe it was just as simple as your life things can be worse.
It could be. We'll talk about that more off because I don't want to ruin the movie. I think this is one people should see.
Yeah, I agree.
And I need to get a link from one of you guys with the good subtitle one so I can
I'll send it to you. Yeah, because Keith, you've been probably not picking up on the story with the bad subtitles.
I had no problems with it. But again, not a movie that I love just for the style of it, for the story of it. I'm not a particular fan, and I'm learning that. But what a beautifully made.
Yeah.
I thought it was well written. It takes you right there. I thought it was great.
All right. Well, you thought it was great. Keith, are you going to reserve a rating on this because you didn't really get a good view of it?
I saw the film. I just don't know what anyone said. It's fine.
So then you don't need to. It's fucking French. Who gives a shit?
All right. Well, Brian, did you want to throw a star rating on this one?
I'd give it a solid 4.
I was going to say 4 also.
Wow.
It may go up. It may go down. I don't know.
Okay. I would give it a solid 4.
Yeah, it's definitely a 4. Definitely a 4-star movie for me. Something I think everybody needs to watch because I think it actually relates to kind of the shit that's going on right now.
I do too.
Oh, yeah.
I do too.
But we have joined the cult of La Haine or hate. Let us know what you think. All right. So the cult films we've been watching have had too many quality films as a movie that people also watch. So, of course, we like to do something a little goofier for this segment. And
you say we're stupid.
We are stupid.
Like them.
We watched the prequel to Manos, The Hands of Fate, which is titled Manos, The Rise of Torgo, which debuted on Amazon in 2018. Written and directed by David Roy. In a throwback to the original, once again, Jackie Naaman Jones reprises her role. She was the original Debbie, the daughter, and she is actually Manos in
this.
Yeah,
she's gotten a promotion in this one.
Yeah, and we kind of...
that says it all.
We were looking for the movie that is the bottom of the barrel.
I don't think this is it.
Ain't the bottom of the barrel, it's the dregs in the bottom of the barrel, dude, because... This podcast owes me an hour and a half of my life back. This movie was fucking terrible.
Don't forget $2 we owe you too.
This is the funniest text chain ever, though. I was crying at them coming in.
I I'm choking on my own words here. I fucking
the word guy
despised this movie. I could not wait for this movie to end. They literally plumbed the joke, the what everybody thought was funny in the first, and this movie makes the original Man of Steel Hands of Fate looks like fucking Citizen Kane, because
there were some annoying parts to it.
There were some.
Yeah, 5 minutes of the original master laughing. Torgo being this really stout, beefy, like 250-pound, 6'8" guy.
Fucking get that.
I don't have no idea.
That has nothing to do with the other two iterations of Torgo.
Yeah, apparently in the century or in the 20 years between the original one here and the one shot in the '60s. He turned into a heroin addict and lost all this weight.
When you stop eating chicken wings, you lose a lot of weight.
I didn't. This is not my favorite iteration of Torgo.
Do tell. The creepy stuff with his mother feeding him, you know, a chicken, a babe. They literally feed a baby a chicken wing in this.
That was the
point. Why DFS was not called on this?
It's in the middle of fucking nowhere. There's no road to it.
The fact that they fed a baby, not a toddler, a baby, a fucking chicken wing. And then the kid, as like 12 years old with the beard.
Yeah.
The kid was closer to Torgo than Torgo ended up.
Yes.
But the kid with the fake beard, fucking, I was crying through the whole thing. But Torgo likes his baths scene.
Yeah.
Was a little
creepy as shit.
Creepy as shit. There was some. And then you knew when mom says, I got to go work my shift. Well, why can't I wait in the car like every other time? You got to go to the grandma's. Knew Ma was going horny.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was wearing the Sunday go to meeting blouse and she's smoking a cigarette. She's going horny. Mama's getting laid. Did you bring the peach cobbler? The fucking sheriff who was dubbed.
Yeah, by the 70-year-old guy who was the original sheriff in the original one.
That was fucking great. So he appeared in all three movies. That was fucking wonderful. I love that. I don't know if you guys went far enough to read Amy Redpath's bio on fucking IMDb. Because no. She so reminded me of the girl from Blair Witch.
Is this the mother?
The mother.
No. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
She's not. Okay. Spoiler alert.
What?
But read her fucking bio on IMDb. I was crying. I was laughing so fucking hard. I almost think we should do an Amy Redpath retrospective.
Has she been in that many films?
She actually has.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And they're all, oh, God. Oh, they're all right up our alley.
Now, I couldn't do a David Roy tribute episode too. See all his movies? Just written in. No. No.
No.
God, no.
No. I did like how they always went, they were taken by
them.
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 Well, no, this was the epitome of, okay, well, I, you know, the master, this was an origin piece, for lack of a better term.
It was.
For both the master and Torgo. And they plumbed the corny stuff out of the original Manos for like an hour and a half. Every 5 minutes they said, well, you'll be the caretaker when the master is away. And they did that one. They had the 5 minute scene of Torgo getting up off of his pile of shit. Which, it was like, they literally did not edit this movie at all. Whatever they shot, they put it all together.
That was a painful scene. Him getting up out of his bed of hay. I did love that they used the music from the original.
Yes. I'll spot them.
That was good.
And the one thing that was redeeming, and this was like first text that I shot, is they had multiple couples making out in cars and drinking liquor.
Yes. And I didn't look to see.
Stop by the cops.
They did the go do what you're doing.
Whatever
what
it is not, you're not doing, go do it somewhere else.
That was old. I could not figure out why everybody fucking sang. Did you pick that up? The first one when
Torgo's just, he should write our theme song. I'm
when
eating chicken and talking to mommy, and man, that was creepy as hell.
I get all the ice cream. But no, the one that really threw me was the first one where the girl turns to the camera. I love goats.
Yeah, and belts it, and starts belting out a show tune about fucking goats.
I didn't.
Well, that's from Torgo. That threw me. Musical.
That fucking threw me. Yeah, this was halfway between Manos and Torgo the Musical. It fucking made me cry. The director, how he fucking, I do want to see them in other things. Where the fuck did he come up with this Torgo?
It's his brother.
Suddenly it's a country boy with the big beard and the...
Yeah,
he answered the ad.
The original Torgo looks like he ate the Torgo from the first movie.
Both of them.
Yeah. For the first two movies.
Both of them. Yes. Oh, it's not. It's Elizabeth Redpath. I apologize. Not Amy. Though Amy Redpath would have worked too. Yeah, I could not figure out. And then Torgo, he sang through the whole thing. I love the grandmas. I thought that was a weird bit of Twin Peaks.
Yeah, that was a Lynchian stuff right there.
Yeah, that. Yeah, that's Torgo in real life.
How does he look skinny?
He lost a lot of weight because it's fucking healthy.
He's a good looking guy.
I guess he was he just went on a method actor. He ate a lot of fried chicken before.
And drank a lot of soda.
Oh, my God.
You know what? Even IMDb
doesn't want to tell you anything.
Doesn't give you the couples. They did give you the previous caretaker, Fasago.
Oh, yeah.
Fasago.
Yeah, yeah. And that was essentially the original Torgo story. Is I want my own wife. And he was actually, he would have made a better Torgo than this other fucking cat.
Now, I am going to say that it looks to me, and I'm just going to throw this out, that the director who, he took one for the team. It was his baby that was eating the fried chicken.
Okay, well, let's call DFS on David Roy then, because, yeah.
It's a protein.
I gotta tell you, I loved...
It was a stunt chicken.
Fucking Teen Torgo. With the beard.
Between
and this was his only movie. This is it.
Well, yeah, because once you hit that pinnacle, you don't go...
Yeah, he basically he gave his magnum opus and then retired at 14.
So what was the point of the fucking gypsy?
To make it more mystical. Ooh. Who the fuck knows, dude? Who the fuck knows why this movie was even fucking made other than the cash in on the Manos craze?
Cash in!
I want to know where the Manos craze. Obviously for us it's become a big thing. But I don't know that that's caught on with the general public. Manos craze.
It is. Let's put it this way. With Misty's, I guarantee you every single Misty that I could talk to has probably seen both of these movies.
Well, yeah, because they've probably seen everything that the Misty's have done. I'm sorry. You guys are the Misty's. The Misters. Whatever you call them. They've seen everything they've done. So, yes, they've seen it. Doesn't make it so... Well, you know what? I want to go buy
Manos. Tell you what. David Roy got $1.99 and $2.99 out of Brian because he got the HD version.
He got $1.99 out of me, too. Or Kathy. So, yeah, I'm just saying that I don't think there's a Manos craze. I don't think us doing this is going to cause this big...
They're going to make a fourth one because of us.
Yeah.
I'm telling you.
No, you know what it is? No, it's Manos, the Brides of Manos, and we should make it.
I've been threatening to make a movie. Don't get me started.
If anyone's watched this, then you can't do worse than this, so go.
We can do it.
Production meeting after this.
Fuck. What? I'm going to tell you, Torgo has been in 40 movies. He's written 18.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a busy guy.
All right, well, I got to ask the question.
Ready?
This or Angels Fallen?
I'll watch Angels Fallen.
I'd watch this.
Angels Fallen.
At least Angels Fallen had tits in it.
Yes.
Or breasts.
And some sort of special effects.
Yeah, there were special effects. But I do like... The Manos mythos. I do. I do like it.
Man. I just tried to love you, Manos.
She fucking, when she shot the sheriff, I went, what? What? She was fucking crazy. I think we got to do an Elizabeth Redpath.
I think you should do Manos the Musical.
You know what? I don't write music, but Brides of Manos.
You know what? It honestly doesn't matter, I don't think.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. I love goats. What? What?
I love goats.
Oh, I got to see where this is going. I got to see where this is going. Holy shit.
So I wasn't... Oh, wait. And then they tie her up. And then the Bride of Manos just walks over and pulls it off her hands. Like it's nothing. Why didn't you just put your hands down? It would have fallen off. It would have fallen off. You were free. You were stupid. Well, it was like the Chinese monkey trap.
This was supposed to be sometime in the 40s and or 50s, and the gals wearing a mini dress and combat boots, which I don't think were in fashion back then.
No, but there was a love of goats in the 40s. I do know that.
Yeah, well.
I have seen the art, the MPA art, has been, there's a lot of goat love. I love goats. What? I can't tell you how much that threw me, but I truly enjoyed the Manos experience from start to finish. There are three horrible movies, but the first one is just, once you learn the backstory, is fucking brilliant. It is so well done for what they did. 32 seconds at a time they filmed that movie and edited it together, and you can't really tell.
And it's better than the sequels that were made 50 years later.
Yeah, it's better than the sequels. But I had to say that they lovingly, they did. If this would have been good, we would have been calling this a loving tribute to Manos. They used the original music. They threw in what was funny in the original, which was the two people making out in the car, which they kept. That was a well. They kept going. They did it with two different couples in this one. They hit a new high. They went crazy on the
crazy.
I made your daddy pay.
Oh. I will say the fights in Manos were way better than the chick fights than the one in this one. You couldn't miss the face by more.
Oh my God! Was that the choreography on the fight? Was so
wait,
bad.
I'm gonna you.
And then that.
Yeah. Literally somebody clapping
yes.
on the soundtrack or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and 4 feet above the person. It was horrendous. It was you're doing it right the wrong way.
You filmed it, yeah, entirely wrong. If you filmed it
if
at
you filmed
angle,
it the other angle, it would have looked
yeah.
like you were hitting
you
her.
Literally filmed it at the angle that it made it the worst.
Yeah, you took away the magic trick. You filmed it and that took away the movie magic of it. You idiot. You fucking idiot. David Roy, you're an idiot. You fed your baby fried chicken and you filmed it wrong. How do you not, in editing, how do you not go, oh, that's bad.
Let's reshoot it, yeah.
Wait, I don't think they looked at anything?
No, they did not edit this. This was a series of scenes.
It was a one shot.
That they put together and they called it a movie.
And you could tell because it goes black.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
like
yeah.
a second yeah. and a half. You're just like, is that over? Is it over? No, there's more. No, there's more.
That's your intermission.
Oh my God! And then the mother ends up a Bride of Manos. How sad. That man. That.
Oh, if I had any emotions for any characters in this, yeah, it might be sad. But who gives a shit?
She was crack shot, man. Fucking shot the sheriff through the neck. She kills two brides with shots directly in between the eyes, man. Flip. She was the Black Widow before the Black Widow was cool. She's fucking, and then
the first deadly redhead.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, they were shocking. It actually, I went, what? On all of the gunshots, I went, what?
Wow, they actually had enough. My shock was, wow, they actually had enough money to do a fully or a special effects gunshot in this type of thing.
Yeah, it was.
It was
really,
just a piece of bubble gum they stuck on.
Yeah,
forehead.
And it was the same one closely. On everyone, but the sheriff. I just tried to love you.
Well, I did not try to love this movie. This is a new low.
A new low?
A new low?
There is no hope.
Wow.
Manos, the Rise of Torgo.
I want Manos to fall a Torgo.
We got to do the star rating, boys.
The Brides of Manos.
Negative yes. 5 stars.
Whoa! It got made. I give it a 2.
I give it. What do you give kids again?
1.5. You didn't feel dirty after watching this.
No, no.
Except for the hair touching, which I don't understand. Oh,
the bathtub scene.
The bathtub scene was really creepy, but it's still the hair touching. And all three movies had that. Had the weird hair touching thing. I don't know what that is. Is it a kink? I don't know. I've seen quite a bit of porn. I've never seen that.
You got the whole internet to look it up. It's a fetish.
Licking
Keith, eyeballs. What's your star
it's
rating?
A fetish. I will give it 1.75 stars.
Better than kids.
I'm more likely to watch this again if I can watch it for free and I'm really hammered. Then I will never watch kids again.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a movie that people also.
So what's
watch.
That average out to? What'd you give it? What'd you give it?
I gave it 2.
You did? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it's fuck negative yeah. 1.25. Oh, man.
That ain't bad.
That's average of negative 0.4. Not quite negative 1.5 star. Go Manos.
Go Manos. Go. Wait. How do you rank it on the sequels? How do you rank it in the Manos movies?
Yeah, we're...
Oh, okay. Well, no. Original Man... I mean, you could... It's literally... What's the word I'm looking for?
The order they came out.
The order they came out. So, Hands of Fate, whatever the second one was, and then this piece of shit.
Manos Returns?
Manos Returns, and then this piece.
Rise of Torgo. That's like not knowing... No, like the Star Wars names. How do you not know the names of the
Because I'm trying to scrub this from my memory, and I'm done talking
we're
about
doing,
it.
We're doing Brides of... We're doing... Coming soon! Brides of Manos!
Contact us about being an executive producer. All right, so we are doing a special unlimited edition of the world famous Three Old Geeks Top 3 list this week because this is one that we've been given a lot of, at least I've been given a lot of thought to it.
Yeah, I never do.
Thanks for the effort, Keith.
Thought?
He's thinking right now.
I give a lot to.
Anyways... All right, so with no time on Whoa. The timer, gentlemen, what are your top 3 original What If stories?
Okay, so my first.
Okay.
Is.
Or What If or Elseworlds or whatever, because mine is actually, I will couch this by saying I did TV, I did movies, and I did comics.
Oh, Mr. Complete.
Holy shit. Hits. That's excellent.
Hit triple crown winner.
Oh, my God.
Hits for the tetric.
I just did...
Just pulled some shit out of your ass, didn't you?
No. Oh. No, I actually thought about it. Okay. There was, as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, what if? So my first one is, what if one of Bruce Wayne's parents had survived?
Oh, wow.
What if he only killed one of them? Like the mom or the dad?
Okay.
And I was thinking about this because I love the Flashpoint series yeah. where, and spoilers, but it's been 10 years, hasn't
it? They each react differently.
Yeah. Thomas Wayne, Bruce is killed. And so Thomas Wayne becomes Batman, but Martha Wayne becomes the Joker. And you don't pick
mind.
It up till the third yeah. fucking, and yeah. it's Rizzo art, it's Azzarello writing.
Yeah, it's truly probably the strongest of the
of the
Flashpoints.
Yeah, when you get to Martha Wayne as the Joker, when that hits, you just go.
She
oh,
covers her mouth with Bruce's blood and pulls it away, and it's a Joker smile. It's like,
and she goes crazy and becomes the Joker, his greatest nemesis. And then the whole emotional, it's just so fucking well
okay.
Written.
So, but to your but point, like what would be your tangent coming off?
What
of this
would
show?
You think? Yeah.
I don't know. I was just thinking about it.
Oh,
I
thought, okay, so you're picturing... Okay.
Yeah, I'm just picturing, like, what if the mom had lived? You know, what if they lost all... Well, I wouldn't have lost all of dad's money, but she probably would have remarried.
She wasn't making the money, so...
So, she remarries, and it's... let's see. She remarries, and she marries Harvey Dent.
He's a well-to-do lawyer.
He would have been Bruce's age.
He'd been too young. Okay,
couldn't do that. Yeah, so it would have had to have been.
Well, you know, Harold and Maude, same difference.
No, but you know what? She could have become part of the Court of Owls.
She could have married Gordon. She could have met him at...
Yeah, they made numerous references. They made numerous references that...
Yes, because he did the... Oh, yeah.
He was the investigating officer.
Yeah, exactly.
Keeping her in line with the investigation they performed.
And also, you know, showing up when Bruce is probably acting out. Rich kid lost his dad.
Gordon was married when he comes to Gotham.
Yeah.
With a pregnant wife. They could have had an affair, and then Bruce would have caught him, and that would have mentally scarred him. He lost his father.
He would have grown up hating.
And Gordon. Bruce Wayne becomes the Joker.
Yeah. Yeah. As many of those rich children of privilege become...
psychopathic killers.
Yeah, a lot of them. Boy, a surprising number.
It's just poor people can't afford to do that.
We can't afford the knives.
Well, we can afford it. We just can't afford to cover it up.
No, we can kill maybe one or two. Yeah. But the whole...
It's so much harder to hide a body when you're poor. Successful serial killers. Or middle class.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was my what if. It's just, what if one of his parents had lived? We wouldn't have Batman, but it could have easily turned into... I do like the Gordon twist, though. I do. Because Gordon, as we know, is a cheating bitch. Officer Essen, who dies at the Joker's hand. And then Barbara Gordon could have been Bruce's stepsister, which would have made the beginning of the killing joke just that much nastier.
Okay, Keith, what do you got?
Actually, mine is relatable. Mine is, what if the Joker had killed Barbara Gordon?
Oh.
Coming off of a few years before Joker killing Jason Todd, and he kills Barbara Gordon, does Batman actually go off and finally go, fuck this guy, I'm done with it, I'm killing him? Does he break his rule because now he's taking...
Two people out of his life.
Someone he was raising, more or less, and then someone who his best friend, which is Gordon arguably is, except in your storyline.
Did you watch The Killing Joke?
Did I watch Killing Joke?
Yeah.
I barely. Yeah. That beginning was horrible.
Yeah. Best friends with benefits. You.
No, I said Gordon. No, I'm saying James Gordon.
Oh, he kills Gordon.
I don't think Batman and him are... Well, I don't know. It's hard to say. No. You would have taken away your best friend's child.
Yeah.
You had taken away essentially your surrogate child when Jason died. Is that where the point where Batman breaks and kills the Joker and actually becomes more like...
The Punisher or something
Punisher, where he just keeps on going on. And there's no rehabilitating these.
No, I don't. But what I do think is that Gordon would.
That's possible, too.
I think that Gordon would become
the one
that Batman has to stop.
Ooh, that's even... I like that. That's a good one.
Yeah, that was better mine. I just thought of the question. I'm like, what would have happened? Because Killing Joke was like the mid-80s. Jason Todd was like 82 or 83. Whenever it cost 75 cents to vote him dead. And then, so it would have been Joker within a short time span, at least in the books, having killed.
You know, my first thought, and it's been proven right, by the way, was that you lose one of the most interesting characters in comics in Oracle.
Yes.
Yes.
And I say it's been proven right because, well, she's Oracle again. She's decided to step away from Batgirl and become Oracle again because that's a great fucking character.
It is.
And it was better when she was paraplegic because then it was a paraplegic.
Oh, then she was also character. She was also not. She's more helpless if someone comes after her.
Right. There's more of a stake though. Yeah. She's proven time and again that she was never helpless. But
no. But
there seems to be more
helpless. I mean, she's more literally handicapped.
Yeah.
That's that. I mean.
It adds a vulnerability to the character that you don't often see. But it proved Barbara Gordon to just be one of the most intelligent characters in the DC universe.
Yes.
Which I'm glad to see them getting back to, because
I'm liking the little parts in the new Joker series she's had so far.
Yes.
Which I would highly recommend.
Oddly enough.
Come on down to Keys Comics to pick it up.
A Joker story you like.
I know. There's been a couple now.
Yeah.
Lance, what's yours?
So what's yours, yeah.
All right. So, for my comics portion of the program.
Ooh.
What if the black costume was not as unpopular as it was to get him to, you know, with all the diehard Spider-Man guys? What if people dug the black costume and he stayed the black costume? So they never had to create Venom.
My first feeling was, I dug the black costume.
I love black costume.
I think most people liked the black costume. I don't remember a lot of people railing against it.
Really? Now, I thought the whole reason... Now, okay, so help me out here. Was the whole reason for the black costume just to create Venom? I thought that the whole thing was... Everybody hated the black costume. There was this hue and cry that, oh, he needs to be the classic blue and red, and that's where Venom came from.
They went pretty quick into the whole it being a symbiotic thing.
Okay.
That story came about pretty quickly
for
something. I mean, you'd have to get a lot of... I mean, this is back when you had to take letters, read them, and then reply, you know...
Okay, so I was always under the impression, so maybe this was kind of a half-assed attempt, because I was always under the impression that everybody hated the black costume, and that's why they switched it back.
I think they were never going to have him in the black costume constantly, because he'd been around for so long in the red and blue that you lose your flagship character. He's the emblem on your thing. Marvel Comic Group had Spider-Man's head in there. You lose that, so it was never going to take.
Okay.
It's sort of like, you know, the black costume on Superman was never going to stick around. The red and blue Superman was never going to stick around. Azbat, you know, they're never going to make huge changes in their main people because of copyright. You can't get people to make underoos with black Spider-Man. So, and that's how they made most of their money back then, was from licensing. And the comics, obviously, but, you know.
I don't know if they started out the black costume, though, to become Venom.
I don't think they did. They just had to be a symbiote, and then was that Stern? I forget who actually...
There were a number of artists. If you grew up on Marvel Comics and you learned to draw and you wanted to draw Spider-Man, you wanted to draw the red and blue.
Okay.
So I think that there was probably more of an outcry from professionals than there was from fans, because most of us...
Well, there's no detailing to it, too. It was easier. I mean, if you were going to be the artist on Spider-Man, you'd draw 26 Spider-Mans in a comic book. If you could just draw the outline and make it all black, that's a lot easier than drawing those lines in. The inkers had to be really relieved.
Yeah. I dug the black costume. And would the world be a worser place without Venom?
Well, that's kind of my point. Is I've never liked Venom. They had Carnage and then Scream and you know,
anti-Venom
and like all this. Would the effort used to create these kind of stupid characters, in my opinion, been better used to create characters that were more interesting?
No, they probably made stupider characters.
Though, you know what, and I'm going to say this, they made the Venom symbiote interesting in Guardians of the Galaxy, where they gave it its home world,
yeah,
and
it was
not
God, and yeah.
But it wasn't Venom. Those were broken symbiotes, and they kind of explained that. The Flash Thompson Spider-Man, where he loses his legs, and then he gets the symbiote and becomes Venom.
Yeah, because he's a Gulf War veteran or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's almost like the Punisher with Spider-Man's powers type of thing. Yeah.
That was interesting. So they did some interesting things with the symbiote. I didn't read King in Black, which I'm assuming had to do with Venom.
It had to do with the Venom God.
The God of the Symbiotes. Yeah. I just remember reading that in previews or whatever. Yeah, not that I read it or whatever.
Yeah, which just totally... Null. That's it. Which I thought would be cool if you fought the void and be null and void. But I think also part of what made Venom is going to hurt you. I think it's the success of Bane.
Really?
Bane came out about a year before Venom.
See, because again...
It's not before the costume came out, but before Venom came out.
I've never been a fan of Bane, and I've never been a fan of Doomsday, because I really thought they created those characters just for the sake of those storylines that they were involved.
And that's what Venom was created for, but then he took off among kids. Kids love Venom. It's, and he was the precursor to Spawn. That's where,
And again, would that's an excellent point. So would there be a, did McFarlane have Spawn in his head since he was 12 years old? Or is that something like, oh, well, I see the trend in comics right now. I'm going to make this dark demon character with the kind of a Spider-Man look with a cape or whatever.
There's probably a combination of truths in both of those. He probably had a character, might even name Spawn. It probably looked more like Batman. And then when Bane and Venom and everything, he's drawing Venom.
Yeah.
He's the first one to draw Venom. So when he goes to do Spawn, he makes him a little bit more Venom-like. Because he sees how Venom
is. Oh, yeah, he mixes them. Because, if you look at Spawn.
It's Doctor Strange's cape.
With Spider-Man's eyes.
Yeah.
And Ghost Rider's chains.
Yeah. It.
So it seemed like he might have had that character developed. He might have had that whole idea. But I think the look of Spawn, which is what attracted people, is developed Venom-esque, through Venom, yeah. Venom and everything else. So,
yeah, absolutely.
All right, Brian, you got another one?
I do. Mine again comes from comics, goes back to the early days. What if Matt Murdock's dad had thrown the fight?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
That's going way back.
Yeah, but what if he had thrown? Well, so is killing Bruce Wayne's parents. But
yeah.
What if he had thrown the fight? What if?
Okay, so
battling Jack Murdock, did what he was supposed to do. He threw the fight. He gets paid.
I'm trying to remember. Does Matt Murdock get blinded as a result of his dad getting killed?
No, he's blinded before.
He's blinded before.
Okay,
but he doesn't have the thought of vengeance, so he. He probably doesn't get sought out by Stick. He just becomes a blind kid. He probably goes insane. Because he is through Stick and everything else.
That he learns to control. Learn to control all his sensory.
And his sensory overload.
Yeah.
He might even be institutionalized because he's hearing voices.
And it could
father,
be.
His father just being a boxer, not understanding any of that, probably doesn't get it.
Abandons him.
Yeah. Something like that.
Matt Murdock. You know, you have to think of like the male equivalent, but Matt Murdock as Typhoid Mary.
Oh,
I don't know.
Because Daredevil doesn't really have like a crazy arch enemy other than Typhoid Mary.
Oh no, not an insane one. No.
Or does Matt Murdock become if he's insane? Actually, there is one other one. Does Matt Murdock become Bullseye?
That's what I was thinking. Bullseye.
That would have been cool.
Where you know his dad's now can't get any boxing. He has to,
and he's the
he
one
has to make Electra. Money. He has to make money, and
yeah,
he doesn't go to college. He doesn't seek the law because he doesn't need to avenge anything.
Yeah,
he doesn't become any part
so
of.
So yeah, he doesn't. He his and he doesn't have.
And he's growing up in Hell's Kitchen where crime is rampant. Does he end up working for the Kingpin?
Oh, that is such a good story. He becomes the Kingpin.
I know. Bullseye.
You like Bullseye better?
He works for Kingpin, but he ends up killing the Kingpin and taking over at the end. He becomes basically Bullseye because he can't miss anything.
Wow, what if he has to end up battling Jack Murdock?
I don't think he does it. I don't know why he would. Or Kingpin has his dad killed because his dad keeps on trying to talk him out of life.
Oh, that's not.
And Kingpin goes, no, he's my number one assassin. I'm not. And
but do you know what? Do you kill enough people that my dad's a loser? Because that would be where Matt Murdock's head would go. Is my dad's a loser? He's just a puppet. He's a pawn. I'm never going to be that.
Throws fights all the time.
Yeah, I'm never going to be that. And he's got these powers.
Yeah.
That nobody knows about. And so he quits studying. He hits the streets. He
starts hanging with a rough crowd.
Yeah.
And starts killing people.
He starts killing people and he makes his nut and he heads up. Yeah. And then he becomes the Kingpin's number one assassin, and battling Jack Murdock's going to talk. What does he do? Kills him.
Wow. Start drawing it.
That's a fucking, that is an awesome story. Wow. You know what? That, thank you. Because that was so much better, or that was so much better than what I had in my head. That was fucking great. That was really good.
Well, no, that's why talking these things through. Yeah. That's why this is unlimited, because we're talking these things through, because I think our three ideas are better than.
Yeah. Oh, no, that was really good. I like that. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the throwing other people's brains and taking in different directions.
Yeah. No, that was really
cool.
All
right, Keith, what do you got?
I have nothing compared to this shit. No,
You will when we're done.
Well, okay. If you remember when Magneto first showed up, he was going to take out the Homo sapiens. He had a missile. He controlled missiles. What if he actually succeeded? What if the X-Men never stopped him? Is there a big war between the humans and the Homo superiors? I mean, they're already feared, but now are they hunted?
Or are they doing the hunting?
They could be, yeah. Or they join up with Magneto. They realize that Xavier's dream is just that, a dream. It's never going to happen.
Well, you know what? And where my head takes me immediately is
future.
20 years No, 20 years after, when the mutants control everything. When they are the elite in society and they are the ones.
Isn't that House of M, essentially?
Could be. Yeah.
Not that I'm a huge.
Well, that's
X-Men
what if
fan.
There were. No, she wanted no mutants, right?
Yeah, well, that's how it ends. Oh, yes. Yeah, that's right. No she mutants. Takes, yeah. But yeah, now it's been a mutant rule world for 20 years. Magneto was probably dead.
You know, what, like a palace coup or something like that?
No, just old age. Yeah, I mean, you think about it.
He was around World War II, yeah. I don't know. It just always struck me as, what if they followed Magneto rather than Xavier?
Didn't they? They didn't do a what if on that?
They might. They've done so many what ifs. Yeah. I don't remember reading that one.
Yeah, I don't ever remember
reading this was either. Actually my third one, so it's like I just kind of, what else can I do? What if Keith came up with a better idea? So, at least I have a third.
Yeah.
You're working on it.
Lance? All right, so.
That's only your second.
For the movie portion of the program.
Uh-huh. I knew he was going to go there next, so I'm following that up with a fellow.
What happens if Big Trouble in Little China was a bigger movie and it had a sequel?
They've been talking about that for quite a while.
They've been talking about it for a long time. My pitch, and this would be...
What if Lance wrote the sequel? That's what
it is. Okay, the one thing...
They had a sequel in comic form.
And thank you for giving those to me. Actually, my pitch is actually more along the lines of they eventually get around to it. And I would like to see, and again, The Rock's always said, The Rock says that this is, you know, Dwayne Johnson said this is his favorite movie. He's always wanted to redo it. I think he'd make a wonderful fill-in for Jack Burton, as long as he's not Jack Burton. Because what I think you need to do is Jack Burton is lost after he saves Chinatown for however many years. And the whole point of this, at least a portion of the story is we have to find Jack Burton. And Jack Burton is now Egg Shen. So he's the old wise guy. He's been living in like the Chinese, the underworld portion of Chinatown. So he knows all the players and stuff like that, all the demons and all that kind of stuff. And he's the old wizard with the six demon bag. So you get the 70-year-old Kurt Russell with the long beard and all the platitudes and stuff like that. I think that would be the movie that I'd pay to see. And then you'd have the new version of Jack Burton is the kind of feckless hero where he kind of stumbles his way through it until the very end where he does something heroic. And I think the Dwayne Johnson has the comedic timing and the action chops to pull that all off.
What if the bad guy in it is the actual Chinese god that cursed Lo Pan?
That's a really good suggestion.
So you're
Qing Dai, Lord of the East.
You're actually going after the next level up. You're leveling up for the bad guys.
Or the ghost of the first sovereign emperor.
Yeah. Got nothing?
No, you know what I was thinking about it, and I like it, and I was thinking, well, first of all, you have to add Kevin Hart, because he plays off The Rock so well, and he's going to be a comedian.
No, he wouldn't be in my movie. The hell with that.
Oh, have you not seen the Jumanjis?
Oh my gosh.
No, I haven't.
They're funny. They're phenomenal.
Together. Oh,
yeah.
They're funny together. Funny together. But what I think you get is, no matter what, you're going to get a Jack Burton-esque character. You're going to get Rock playing Jack Burton.
The enjoyment of Big Trouble in Little China is the fact that Jack Burton is supposed to be the hero, and he basically does nothing heroic until the very end.
Right. And I love the idea of Jack Burton as the old guy. I love that. I think that you get, what you get is the Rock playing Jack Burton, and I kept thinking,
No, I don't. That was my fear. They've been talking about The Rock, and they talk about a remake, and you can't remake
it.
You can't.
No, it has to be. Yeah, you can't remake this movie. But, it needs to be the sequel.
But you
to
need
the
movie. Some sort of
more trouble in Little China.
You need a bigger setup. Whether it's Wang looking for Jack.
Yeah.
And you know, The Rock just happens to be, if you could use The Rock, someone who he knows from. You know, he's now running the diner because his dad's passed, obviously, and you have Rock comes in for food all the time. When they get the word of Jack and he's going to go off and rescue his buddy who saved his girlfriend, his wife, the mother of his children now. Yeah. And he feels a life debt to him. He even says it. I owe you, Jack. And so he goes off to find him and somehow you have to involve how the Rock gets involved too. And the Rock is, again, not Jack Burton, but
what?
Similar, where he doesn't know this stuff. Or either that, or you have him be a guy, because of what happened before, who believes all this stuff and is way into it. You go almost like a Mulder with this.
Okay.
Where he's into everything. He knows even more than Wang does, because Wang's gone on and have a family, even though he hasn't actually studied, and they go looking for Jack.
Nah, I still think you need to have that to get the comedic elements. You need to have that kind of hapless guy, who's a tough guy, but he's like thrown into this. You know, I'm a normal guy. I'm just dealing with some really abnormal stuff.
Well, that's what you get with your Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart's not going to be in a damn movie.
That's where Kevin Hart comes.
What else you got, Brian? You got anything else?
He's a short round.
Yeah, he's the guy who's the delivery driver.
He's
who gets sucked into this whole thing.
The Rock is the delivery driver to the temple, to the Dragon of the Black Bull.
And he eats there all the time, and they're
real nice to him. I'm buying that.
Hitting on Wang's daughter and stuff, and
wait, dude, that all works.
Wait, this would be 20 some years later. Wang got married. I'm sure he had a daughter.
He got married to Mao Yan with the girl with the green eyes. Okay, and they have a daughter who has green eyes.
But was always made to wear brown contacts by her.
And the Qing Dai, the Emperor of the East, the demon, to appease the demon, you need to sacrifice the girl with green eyes. Dude, now I'm writing the fucking script. That's it.
So many scripts floating around here.
I know, we're busy.
Three Geeks Productions presents.
We're going to be busy.
You got anything else, Brad?
I don't. Those were my two. I did not have a third.
All right.
I have, and this one is the one that, could have changed the whole state of everything. What if Tom Cruise was picked for Tony Stark in the movie?
We wouldn't have the Avengers.
That's what I'm saying. We wouldn't have a lot of the movies.
Well, we can't say that. We can't say that.
Tom Cruise is one of the biggest movie stars in the world.
He is.
And very talented, by the way.
But the movie would have been different.
Let me ask you this. Was Robert Downey the perfect Tony Stark because of his personal, like his literal personal life?
I think he put enough of himself into that, the wisecracking. Because Tony Stark, if you look historically through comics, is not a wisecracking guy. He's not making these.
Yeah, he's not.
And Robert Downey Jr. seems to have that sort of attitude. So, and playing off of, I think he knew Favreau really well before that even. So then Tom Cruise who hijacks films. He wants to do his own stunts. He basically dictates stuff to the directors. How much would he overrun the production rather than Robert Downey Jr. who just got out of prison?
That's the point is. To me, Downey Jr. was the perfect Tony Stark because of his personal demons.
It was a perfect
time. I was expecting they were going to do Demon in a Bottle. Yeah, they were going to do Demon in a Bottle until this became this huge thing, and they wanted to do the bigger stories instead of the smaller stories. But to me, there's nobody. I mean, like, you're right though. Like Tom, like that's the other thing is Tom Cruise. The way, you know, does he take over Marvel Studios?
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. And does Marvel Studios become
also,
as big?
Also, kids don't feel drawn into Tom Cruise. Where kids dig Robert Downey Jr. Kids like Iron Man. Iron Man started becoming the most popular hero. Because he does have that, he has that wit, he has that humor, he's rich, he has all the cool toys. Tom Cruise would not play it that way, so I don't think he'd be as attractive. He'd be attractive to us, not that way, so slow down there.
Yeah, no, he'd make us all gay.
But no, I mean, he might have worked for us, the comic fans, but I think for general audience, with the exception of women,
I honestly don't think if Tom Cruise was Iron Man, it dies with that movie.
I think because it's followed by the Hulk, which wasn't that well received either.
Right.
So you're following, this is Marvel making their own movies, and all of a sudden they have Tom Cruise, probably does a couple $100 million, you know, because it's Tom Cruise, so people go see it, but it doesn't have the legs, and then you have Ed Norton's Hulk, which he wasn't even promoting that. So you have two.
I really like that Norton's Hulk.
I know, but the movie only did, what, $189 million? And it wasn't, he was not promoting it. He was already stepping away from it as it was coming out.
Right.
Because they wouldn't let him do more Bruce Banner shit. I loved it, too. I thought it was a great tribute to the Bill Bixby
stuff. Yeah, so do I.
But if you had two moderate movies.
Moderate successes not the blockbuster successes. Yeah. I don't think we're living in the world we're living in.
Exactly. Right. And I think that this industry would have suffered from it more because you wouldn't have as many people into it. I mean, you wouldn't have billion-dollar superhero movies.
No, yeah, I agree. I think I'm picturing Iron Man and Top Gun.
Yeah. Iron Man and Mission Impossible. It's like,
Mission Impossible is a pretty popular franchise. He probably would want
to be out of the armor more than any armor.
Yes.
Yes.
Which again wouldn't lend to Iron Man.
No, I agree completely. Yeah, I think that, and again, that's always my complaint about superhero movies is you don't spend enough time as the Shadow or whatever.
Yeah.
Downey Jr., he's comfortable with being in the suits. You know, he's comfortable having the faceplate down and stuff like that. I think I have never watched a Marvel movie with Iron Man in it or pretty much anybody in it and said, oh, he's not being, you know, Captain America or he's not being Iron Man. You know, it's Tony Stark or whatever. I never felt that way.
If the studio didn't want to take a risk on the drug rehab,
Robert Downey Jr.,
go with the popular Tom Cruise, I think it changes our whole...
Yes, yeah. It changes. I don't even know if we have a podcast. It changes geekdom. It really does.
Yeah. So I don't think
it would have been a successful movie. You're correct.
Yeah.
I think Tom Cruise is talented enough to play Tony Stark.
I think he could have done it. I just think he would. It would have been different.
He doesn't have the charm.
No, it wouldn't have went over the younger generation. There wouldn't be younger people going to see these movies.
Yeah, because there wouldn't have been an Iron Man 2. The reason that we have the MCU is that Iron Man did that well.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking to him. And it's one of those things where it's a key point in geekdom.
Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely correct.
What's your TV one now? It's going to be Kolchak.
It actually came out of Kolchak. However, in the situation of a show being canceled before its time, and I bitched about this before.
Kung Fu.
What happens... if Fox does Firefly right, shows them an order, shows them on a night that...
Well, what if they wouldn't have got baseball? You can just go...
Exactly.
What if Fox didn't get baseball?
My question to you, gentlemen, is what if Firefly never got canceled after the first season?
Honestly, I don't think it would be the hit it is today.
I'm glad I brought it up because that's a point.
I think it would have went on for a while, and I think the first couple seasons would have been great, and I think it would have lost direction after that. It would have started falling into Star Trek area and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think they would have either had to gone full blown what are the Reavers, sort of like they did in the movie.
Well, yeah, we kind of got a. I think I've read somewhere that the movie was the resolution of you were going to get this if the series continued.
Yeah, type of thing. It was. and I would see that as the resolution of the second season, and then where do you go?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, they can only do so many heists. They can only, you know, it would have started imitating itself, and I think it would have been popular. I mean, like Buffy or Angel, they kept on going on, but they kept on doing similar stuff every year. There was a big bad. Even though it, you know, the fans still hold up and still like it, I just think it wouldn't have been this point of light in people's lives that they keep on striving for.
You would not have the fandom.
Okay, so you don't think the fandom would have...
The fandom wouldn't be as intense.
Okay.
Because it would have been satiated. There still would have been a fandom, and there would be...
It's still people talking about it now, but it wouldn't have been, because you do have that what if. That's the whole thing. Where was it going to go? What was it going to do? This is such a great, there was 13 episodes, 12 episodes? Yeah. They're so great, 13 episodes, but what if it got picked up for a full season? Now you're doing twice as many in the second season. Everything gets a little bit watered down when you stretch it out. And I think you'd have weaker episodes. They don't really have weak episodes during this because it was so concentrated, limited. I think it still would have been amongst one of the great sci-fi shows ever, but I think it would have ran its course within 3-4 years.
You think 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Because I was kind of thinking of Supernatural as a model. And the first five, probably the first five seasons of Supernatural were pretty good. Yeah. The 18th wasn't.
No, they did run, but, you know, and it could have went on that long. It could, as long as the actors still wanted to do it, it could have went on that long. But, because, you know, again, if Fox didn't have baseball, because they got baseball money. That's where they didn't need this stuff. And American Idol money and all this stuff that costs shit to make.
That you got paid. Well, no, they got paid.
Who Wants to Marry My Millionaire and all this other crap, all this reality TV that just costs like $50,000 to make an episode and you're getting ratings that are off the chart. You know, yeah, I think it would have suffered from that. Fox may even canceled it into the second season going, so it's costing too much.
It's the same, would Marilyn Monroe or James Dean or whoever be more popular if they didn't die young type of thing?
Yeah. I think.
Well, you know what? It's funny that you would say that. I'm looking at Marilyn Monroe, because I've now looked at tens of thousands of pictures of her. Just today. That's how I start my days out. My Marilyn slideshow. No, she was becoming unattractive.
Okay.
Her lifestyle was wearing on her.
It started wearing on, and you could see it. So for Marilyn to die when Marilyn did, she was 36 years old. It's not like James Dean, who did two movies and then...
Well, those are the two biggest examples I can think of.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is that maybe it ended when it was supposed to.
Okay.
Because you're right. I don't think... You know, you talk about Supernatural, you have an entire world built that'll carry you for 12 seasons and still be semi-interesting.
No, they had to keep on expanding. You had demons, then all of a sudden you go to angels, then you had to go into Leviathans, then you had to have fucking God there.
Yeah, you had to literally throw God in. You had to take on God.
God's sister, the dark or the...
Yeah, the darkness.
But you still have enough interesting mythology to go to. And yeah, you could say, well, now you're off the rails and you've jumped the shark. But you only had... a specific kind of niche with Firefly. You didn't have a lot.
My argument would be that there are more worlds
you can go to, and you can set up a whole.
I was going to say that I thought that the world building in Firefly was good enough where you could literally do you could watch old westerns, take a plot from an old western, and then put it in a planet.
You also had the Empire, and you had them being the rebels, the brown coats who lost, who are. Eventually, you'd come back. There's going to be something going on because you had the Alliance and you had them. So you did have that overlying bad guys that need defeating.
Right.
Or they needed to be defeated by totally and utterly.
I'm not putting down the world of Firefly guys. I'm seriously not.
Yeah, you are.
I'm just saying that.
Stop making fun of Firefly, man!
It's Brian who's been saying this, so, you know, direct all hate mail to him.
I liked Firefly. I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was a little one-note. I liked the idea of the Western, but now put the Western somewhere else.
Well, that's
because everywhere they went was Western. But it's like they just went to Planet Naboo, which is Nebraska. And then they went to Planet Ioene, which is Iowa.
you could have went on to the more alliance held worlds, which were more modern.
Right. Which is probably where they had the horrors.
The horrors? The horrors were on all the planets.
Morena Baccarin.
Yep.
Horrors.
Companions.
Don't be bad mouthing my girlfriend.
I'm not.
Companions.
Like I said, they had a world built, and I thought it was interesting. I don't know.
You don't know if it could have carried.
Yes. If it could have carried. Yeah. Three or four, five seasons.
They would have had to gone the supernatural route where you start expanding. You have big. Like, you have the Reavers, and you have to have stuff like that that's threatening them, driving them into the lines. Areas, and you'd have to do that. But I think what I was just saying with Supernatural, I think as the seasons went on, the episodes that stick with me are the ones that were the more like them in the horror films, and that
the Scooby-Doo ones that broke the mold breakers.
Yeah, and the ones that weren't part of
But I don't think that Firefly lends itself to that.
No, I was about to say you don't have that much an opportunity that other than having a James a dumbass episode.
Yeah.
Who turns out to have a heart of gold.
And
you can only do that so many times too before it becomes.
Yeah, you needed to. Some of the characters were really interesting. Some of them were a little one note.
Yeah, well, they had chance. They never had a chance to build on them, too. They had 9 characters, 13 episodes. It's hard to build on anyone's character. You know, they focused on Nathan Fillion, the captain.
As they should have.
Yeah, yeah. But they never really dealt with Zoe or Wash, really. I just think they could have done more with them. They could have done more with their backstories or things from their past coming up.
I agree.
But I don't think past 3-4 seasons, I mean, even like I said, Buffy and Angel, both created by Whedon, they around season 3 or 4 they had hiccups. You had Glory, you had I like the rock creature, but the afterwards, the Jasmine or whatever her name was.
Yeah.
Which wasn't good. So I would have thought that it would have ran out of steam. And you have to look at it, too. It might have prevented Joss from making Avengers, which I think he did a great job on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any honorable mentions, or we'd gone to the wall on this one?
You come up with anything?
I did not. Okay. But you know what? There were areas I wasn't looking at. Like, I didn't spend a whole lot of time on movies. I didn't spend a whole lot of time on TV. No. So, all right, so I think we revisit this, because I think it was a lot of fun for me.
Well, I do have coming up with, ideas. Yeah,
it really was fun.
Probably do this maybe a couple times a year or whatever.
Yeah.
I do have one honorable mention.
Oh, okay.
What if we were a better podcast?
Oh!
We'd actually make money. But if anyone wants to give us ideas for others, we'll be glad to
yes,
roll them over on the podcast.
Please pitch us your what ifs, either TV, movies, or comics. That's this week's unlimited top 3 list. Let us know what you think.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right, so for a review of the latest offering from Star Wars on the Disney app, we are talking about Bad Batch Episode 4, entitled Cornered. And this one, it strikes me that this is going to be a lot of, we need to go to this planet for this. And then the hijinks ensue, because it's like been the last 2 of them.
Yeah.
It is definitely an Omega Robin moment.
Yeah.
It's like Baby's Day Out with Omega.
Yeah, this was literally, let's go pet the nice doggy. Oh, no, it stole the Stormtrooper dolly that I was holding. Oh, I have to go get it back. It was, this was the one I was fearing.
This is what I was afraid of, too.
Yeah, this was the one that I was afraid of.
I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, made up for by the first appearance of Fennec Shan, voiced by Ming-Na. Thank you. I was drawing a blank on her name.
Yeah.
I did want to like this one more. It was one that I kept going through, going, loved her, loved that character.
I thought the character was okay in this. She didn't really...
She didn't strike me as, like, in The Mandalorian, she was, like, dangerous. And in this, it was like... And maybe it's because she was supposed to be younger or whatever.
But the problem that I have is that you got a group of 5 stormtroopers that can take out...
Like, armies.
Yeah. Armies. And...
They're having problems with her.
Yeah.
She knocks 2 of them out.
Yeah.
One with the headbutt, and then Wrecker, who's supposed to be, like, uber strong, she slams him into a pipe, and all of a sudden he's out.
Yeah. For the rest of the show.
Yeah, pretty much.
So I wanted to like this one more. I thought that there was some...
missteps.
Yeah, there you go. Which doesn't happen often.
No, this was kind of disappointing.
Yeah, this is the... To me, though, this is the week... I mean, 4 episodes in, this is the weakest one yet.
Yeah. Well, but they have a... I mean, there's a track record. So you're looking at... When you do a misstep like this... Especially when you're introducing a major character to the series, you've avoided making Omega the Robin
hostage of the week.
Yeah, Robin.
Yeah,
I did think it's I was intrigued by was she hunting the Bad Batch or is she just looking for Omega?
My thought was that the Kaminoan scientist said that we need a new sample.
Oh yeah,
and. Keith, you made allusions to she's empathic and she can adapt to anybody's skills.
Like
she's going to be the most valuable out of the Bad Batch as far as genetic material. So that's why I predicted that the Kaminoans sent Fennec Shand after Omega specifically.
I don't know if it's Kamin, whatever, the El Caminos. I thought that maybe they sent her to get out of there, to get her away from the Alliance or the Empire.
They make an allusion to,
and then it was them going after her, trying to find her.
The sample, the original sample, breaking down.
Yes,
and that there's only one pure sample left.
Everything and else is degrading. I guarantee it's going to be Omega.
So that
she's the last one.
Why did they create her as a female?
Because no one was suspected she was a clone.
Deadlier of the species.
Didn't know she was a clone.
Da-da-da!
Because everyone would be looking for a clone to be a guy.
True. She can also give birth.
Yes. And
to a new sample.
Ah.
Look at you.
I'm just saying. Get one of her eggs. If they went that way, I would be shocked. Not that they went that way, but that I guessed it.
Yeah, so what I...
Oh, you're wrong, so it's okay.
Yeah.
You know that's not going to happen.
But it makes sense. But I don't see... Yeah, well, no. You know what? The Kaminoans would have... or Kaminoans would... Jango Fett lived in their fucking city, so...
Yeah.
It's not like they're not used to bounty hunters.
And they're also about to get replaced. All the money they're making off them is about to get replaced. So they need a pure sample. They need something to...
I think it's interesting that Filoni can come up with points in time in Star Wars lore, especially lore he created, but he didn't even create this, that give you that interesting perspective. Like, you don't think about... We know that the clones were replaced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What were the politics of
that? Why were they replaced, and what effect did it have on the people who made the clones?
Yeah.
And yeah, no, he does think deeper than most.
Yeah. And he gives you that moment in time for Star Wars. It was not my favorite. I thought, I'm going to agree with you on that.
It's
it was
the weakest so far. Yes.
Yeah. And it did go with the Rescue Me of the Week.
Yeah.
In a stupid, stupid way.
Like it said, it wasn't even like Home Alone. It was more like Baby's Day Out.
Yeah. Like, oh, I lost my
friend. I'm hanging up or something.
I don't know what to do. Come with me, little guy.
Yes. Would you like some candy? I mean, it was like literally like that. Yeah.
I was not I was not overly impressed with it.
I wasn't either.
It was kind of a departure from...
Yeah, especially since the last episode was so freaking awesome.
Yeah. So, not my favorite episode. I wanted to like it more.
I was hoping when I heard what was going on with it, I'm like, okay, this could be really cool.
Yeah. And Fennec Shand's going to be a major character now going forward. I hope it's not going to be a we barely escape her every episode kind of thing.
I think they set up we barely escape Crosshairs every episode. I think for some reason Omega even said it like, oh, if you're by yourself, you should join with us. I'm thinking, because she's supposed to be this deadly shot, I'm thinking she's the replacement for Crosshairs.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if it goes the other way. She's after them and Crosshairs breaks this programming to save them.
I don't think he will. I think that Omega will be the key to breaking his programming. But I think they're gonna. I think there's got to be a few more betrayal moments coming out of Crosshairs.
Well, I'm sure there is, but I'm talking down towards the end of the season.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, not a favorite.
All right.
Four in. Fuck the show.
Bad Batch number four.
This is like Falcon Winter Soldier all over again.
Watch at your own risk. Let us know what you think.
Tune in next week. Same geek time, same geek podcast for all new, all different material. Thanks a lot for listening. And hey, keep on geeking on.